For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. French President Emmanuel Macron has visited Guadeloupe in the Caribbean following the devastation of Hurricane Irma. He's promising a massive airlift as other European leaders, including the Dutch King and British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, visit allied islands. Sir Ronald Sanders is the ambassador from Antigua and Barbuda to the United States. He says his government is disappointed by the lack of offers of help from their large, wealthy neighbors.
None so far. It's been very disappointing. The only country that's reached out so far has, as a result of our initiative to talk to the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, is Canada. Canada sent in a team yesterday of people who will assess what the situation is and see how best they can help. But we've had nothing from the United States. The United Kingdom, of course, is preoccupied with its own problems in Anguilla and the British Virgin Islands. But even there, we've been quite surprised at how poor the response has been.
The United Nations says the number of Rohingya Muslims who have fled Myanmar for neighboring Bangladesh in the last month has reached nearly 400,000. The UN Security Council has scheduled a meeting to discuss the situation following warnings of a textbook ethnic cleansing. From the United Nations headquarters in New York, Nick Harper reports.
The United Nations has scaled up its emergency response to the escalating refugee crisis, saying 370,000 Rohingya have now entered Bangladesh to escape the violence in Myanmar's northern Rakhine state. A flare-up in fighting between Rohingya insurgents and government soldiers in late August has displaced thousands of civilians. However, the UN has questioned the government's level of violence used against the minority population, documenting villages burned and extrajudicial killings. Bangladesh's Prime Minister says her country will shelter the refugees, but is calling on Myanmar to view the situation with humanity and take them back. Nick Harper, New York.
U.S. President Donald Trump is now saying the latest round of sanctions imposed by the U.N. Security Council against North Korea is just a small step compared to, quote, what needs to happen. Pyongyang has threatened Washington with the greatest pain. President Trump has indicated more is to come as countries such as Malaysia change their approach.
And we find that to be very important. We had a vote yesterday on sanctions. We think it's just another very small step. Not a big deal. Rex and I were just discussing. Not big. I don't know if it has any impact, but certainly it was nice to get a 15-0 vote. But those sanctions are nothing compared to what ultimately will have to happen.
Hope Hicks agreed to be the permanent communications director for U.S. President Donald Trump. This is FSN.
Thanks very much, Priscilla Huff. Well, it's another miserable old afternoon stroke evening here in Manchester. Hope you're well. It's approaching 3 minutes past the hour for Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen and welcome to The Richie Allen Show.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is The Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, later in the program, Anna Cannon from regret.ie returns to the program. Can't believe it's been so long since Anna was on. Now, the Irish Times reported today that almost 650 girls in Ireland reported requiring medical intervention or treatment after receiving the HPV vaccine. That's according to data collected by the Irish State's Medicines Watchdog. This has huge implications. There's more to that story than I'm telling you now. I'll tell you more about it a bit later on. Huge story this. Those who follow Irish politics will know the TD Claire Daly has been making her presence felt in the Dáil, which is the Irish Independent, the Dáil, and she's been saying no longer is it acceptable or it should not be acceptable for the families, for the mothers of those injured by Gardasil to be called emotional terrorists. So we'll talk to Anna Cannon from regret.ie in the second hour. And this hour, I caught up with somebody today called Bjorn Eriksson. Now, Bjorn is a former national police commissioner in Sweden, and he's also the former president of Interpol. Now, he's heading up an organisation in Sweden which is trying to prevent the country rolling out, well, the cashless society agenda. Sweden is virtually, nearly entirely cashless. And I said today, and I meant it, the implications for that and for everybody else on planet Earth are startling. I would say terrifying. So Bjorn Eriksson, I had to pre-record him because he was at a dinner this evening, but I spoke to him. He was in Stockholm when I caught up with him earlier on. And I think you'll find what he had to say interesting, Bjorn Eriksson, this hour. We're live, of course, on davidicke.com. Do please bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Pretty much everything we speak about in depth on this programme is covered in equal depth on davidicke.com/headlines. We're live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and we are live on richieallen.co.uk as well. It's always good to have your company. I mean that sincerely. Tweet me at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. It's the best way to reach me when I'm live on air. Hello. Hello. Right, we're going to move on swiftly because there's a few things I'd like to chat about before we hear from Bjorn Eriksson in Sweden. Here's a laugh to begin with, dear listener. Why not? Why not laugh every now and then? If you lose your sense of humour, you lose it all, don't you? If you lose your sense of humour, it's all over. Listen to this. This reported by the BBC today. You listening? Pay attention now. This is the BBC. Vital health checks should be carried out in shops and at football grounds to diagnose people at risk of heart attacks and strokes, says NHS chiefs. Now, NHS England and Public Health England are urging the novel approach to get more people to come forward for the over 40s checks programme. Only half of those eligible in England end up getting the regular checks. Firefighters could even carry them out. Sorry. That wasn't for effect, by the way. I genuinely forgot that part of the story. So as well as going to a shop and getting a health check, or getting a health check at a football ground, a firefighter could also carry out a health check, or even refer patients while they do home safety checks. Right? The health checks were introduced to spot the early signs of conditions such as dementia, diabetes, heart disease and strokes. They look for conditions such as high blood pressure and cholesterol. We'll come back to that one in a minute. But, writes the BBC, because of the large numbers not taking part in the scheme, there are an estimated 5.5 million people with undiagnosed high blood pressure alone. I don't know about you, dear listener, but reading this bullshit, my blood pressure is off the charts. Channel your inner even Jackie Gleason. Firefighters. Large numbers of people are not taking part in the scheme, so we have to come up with sexy ways of testing people. Football stadiums, shops and firefighters. If everybody entitled to the checks, which are offered at least every 5 years up to the age of 74, if everybody got them, we could abate or prevent 9,000 heart attacks and 14,000 strokes over the next 3 years. That's from the BBC today. Yeah, there's a double bluff going on there, isn't there? They don't really want us living any longer unless we're working and chained to their system, right? So what's really going on? What's really going on? One word. Sales. 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 It's all about sales. You see, GP surgeries, now this is including the one I go to, by the way, are nothing more than high street retailers for prescription drugs. That's what they are these days. I know, because I've done my research, that GP surgeries now spend most of their time, wait for this, texting, emailing and writing to people to get them to take this test or that test. To keep us alive? No. Reminding people all the time that you're in this risk category or that risk category. Their aim is to get people to come in order that they be issued a diagnosis. Everybody gets a diagnosis and everybody gets a prescription. But many, many people, including your presenter, ignore the notices to be tested to come in for a screening. Now, I'm 42 and I've been getting these letters and texts from the surgery for about 18 months. So many people are not doing it, and this isn't good. So let's start harassing people in shops and at football stadiums. When people's houses are burning to the ground, when the firefighters have saved the cat but they couldn't save the piano, the firefighter will then say, listen, while we're here, let's give you a little cholesterol check there, eh? Let's start harassing people. Hound people into taking the stupid test, then tell people there is something wrong with them. And prescribe. Prescribe the living bejesus out of them. And ironically, you've taken a healthy person who nothing was wrong with them. They had no worries. They were going along fine. And now you've told them they have a condition, which they probably don't. And by the way, cholesterol, as explained by wonderful people on this programme like Ghislaine Langto and others, cholesterol is a good thing. It's not a demon disease. Prescribe a healthy person, tell them they have a condition, and now you've got them taking something which is actually going to make them sick. That's the double bluff. You'll kill them eventually, but you and Glaxo and Merck make billions. Well, they do. Merck and Glaxo make billions. You, the doctor, get a new car and theatre tickets. You get tickets to the theatre. It's a racket. People are not acquiescing to the bullshit. They're not rushing to get checked up. They're not rushing to get prescribed. So let's get football stadiums, shops and firefighters testing people. 12.5 minutes past the hour. I take salbutamol. It's an inhaler. Now most of my life I've kept fairly fit. These days I'm very fit. I've never smoked anything. Not even the odd joint. Never even tried it. So I've kept in pretty good health over the years. But I developed an allergy to dust as an adult. And it sometimes gives me shortness of breath. So I get a salbutamol inhaler. It's a blue thing. You know what it is. Ventolin is the brand name in the UK. Or one of them anyway. And I go through about 6 of these a year, not even. Which is good, because I keep on top of the reasons why I get short of breath, which, as I said, are an allergy to dust. I'm not making this up. A couple of weeks back, when I was picking up this prescription, the chemist asked me would I come into a room with him and speak to me. Went in and said, what's this all about? I have no time for authority, you see, or people who think they have authority. I'm a bit grumpy. So what do you want? He said, the doctor has said that you're not responding to messages, that you've refused to have an asthma test, and we're wondering why you're not using your inhaler very often. And I said, because I don't need it very often. He said, you should be using it more, but you're not. Maybe you've managed your asthma. Maybe you need to go and have a test. And then he said, maybe stop the salbutamol inhaler and maybe take a preventative inhaler, which is a steroid, and then you can have both, but you might find you're using the blue one even less frequently. I told him to fuck off. Without saying fuck off, I said, you're an idiot. I'm getting along fine. Fill the prescription and let me go. It's all about ching ching, you see. Get him onto a brown inhaler. Get him taking something he doesn't need. Anyway, more on medical matters in a minute. MPs, as you probably know by now, members of Parliament, backed the EU withdrawal bill overnight by 326 votes to 290. The ayes have it. Critics warned that it represented a power grab by ministers. It doesn't represent any power grab. We'll get into this more over the coming days. The bill, which is supposed to end the supremacy of EU law in the UK, will now go on to the next parliamentary stage. It will get another reading. There will be more attempts to change it, with MPs wanting to amend it here and there. Several senior Conservative backbenchers have published a proposed 157 amendments covering 59 pages. We haven't heard the end of this yet. What's it all about? Well, the EU withdrawal bill overturns the 1972 European Communities Act, which, if you know your history, took the UK into the then European Economic Community, or the EEC. So, the withdrawal bill overturns that act and also converts existing EU laws into UK law to ensure there are no gaps in legislation and that everything proceeds smoothly. Why did most of the Labour Party, not all, but most of them, and the Lib Dems vote against it? Because they're part of the wider conspiracy to stop Brexit from ever happening. It's just as simple as that. They want a transition period. You know, I was watching all channels today, and senior Remainers like Alistair Darling, who's of course the Labour former Chancellor of the Exchequer, senior Remainers or Remoners, were today suggesting that the transition period might go on even longer than 2022. It should go on. The negotiations should end in 2019. That should be it, one way or the other. But they've already proposed over the last couple of months that we have a transition period after 2019 that might last for 3 years. Now you've got senior figures saying it could go on and on and on, the transition period, meaning we'd never leave the European Union. Now remember, Article 50 clearly states that when it is triggered, the triggering country formally notifies the European Union that it's leaving, which we've done, right? After the vote in June last year, it took us a long time, but we finally triggered Article 50 back in March, meaning we have 2 years to agree a deal. This is the law. And when 2 years are up, there's either an agreement even, or there isn't one. If there isn't one, it's tough shit, Paddy. That's the way it works. When 2 years up, there's no agreement, the country leaves and trades with the rest of the European Union on World Trade Organization terms. That's the way it should happen, you see. But what we've seen already is laws have been bent, they've been broken, even not so much bent, by those who want to ignore the will of the people, to ignore the fact that the country voted to leave the European Union. Why did they want to do that? Let this drag on until so much time has passed that they can say with some credibility, Jesus, it's been years actually since the referendum, let's have another one, right? 17 and a half minutes, nearly 18 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio, and of course richieallen.co.uk. How much time have I spent over the last year, 2 years, speaking about the news? The news, news channels like Sky and the BBC, what they are, how they operate. I think I've outlined in detail. I've made it a mission of mine because I've worked, of course, in mainstream media at every level. I think I've outlined in detail how the news channels replaced daytime soap operas in homes around the world. We know news is scripted drama. If you go to our YouTube channel, I've done a lot of work on how news has taken over our homes, how it is a never-ending serial drama keeping us uninformed, but also through repetition programming you and me to make us believe that we have a central part to play in global events, daily global events. That's my opinion. And I've done a lot of work on this. Now, today, Sky News is advertising as part of its news bulletins, and I kid you not, Sky News is advertising for smartphones. They are running infomercials for smartphones during the news coverage. And this is relevant to what I'm going to be speaking with Bjorn Eriksson about in a short while. Over to Kay Burley.
Apple is launching its new iPhone models today to mark 10 years since the first model went on sale. And despite a recent drop in sales, the company continues to build on its multi-billion dollar empire. For the first 3 months of this year, Apple sold 41 million iPhones. iPads were also up 15% in sales, despite declining for a little while. I was one of those. And 4 million Apple Macs were brought and bought by customers. So in the last 3 months, Apple has made more than $43.5 billion. That's quite a lot of money, isn't it? So what can we expect from the new iPhone models? Let's go live to Stoke Newington and speak to freelance tech reporter Tom Wiggins. Hello to you, Tom. Thanks for joining us. What can we expect? And there's more than one phone being launched, isn't there?
So, yeah, I think the iPhone 8 is probably not going to be the big news tonight. We expect to see another one that kind of comes in at a level above that, called the iPhone X.
Wow. And millions of smartphone zombies are queuing around the world for days outside Apple stores to get an iPhone. They are zombies. So you just heard an infomercial for iPhone on Sky News after Burley got through giving you the very healthy financials of Apple and telling you she bought an iPad. She did say that, by the way. Listen back to it. That is an Ofcom violation if ever there was one. After doing all of that, she then hands over to a tech guy who tells you, and he did tell you, I'm not going to play it. He told us even how amazing it is and why we should have one. That's news in a nutshell. Now, you'll hear me talking to Bjorn Eriksson soon about the cashless society agenda, and smartphones are central to that. So your news channels are pushing phones instead of doing the news. And when Sky News isn't pushing the iPhone, in the same programme, this, by the way, I'm not making this up, it's pushing flu vaccines. Marvellous. Have a listen to this. Again, it's the amazing Kay Burley.
NHS is warning of a big increase in pressure from the flu virus this winter. Comes after hospitals in Australia and New Zealand struggle to cope with a particularly heavy flu season. Outbreaks often come ahead of major flu epidemics here in Europe. With me is GP Dr. Daisy Bennett. Hello, Doctor. Thank you for joining us.
Hello.
How worried are we?
Oh, Dr. Daisy Bennett is very, very worried. We need to vaccinate everybody in the NHS and pretty much everyone else too, says the doctor.
We need to have plans in place because we don't want a crisis, we don't want a disaster. We need to make sure that we're prepared. So on top of the practical steps that you can make, which is having beds available and having staff on duty to make sure that they're covering all the shifts, we also need to make sure that the NHS staff themselves are healthy. So therefore they need their flu jabs as well. So the staff need to be healthy and not off sick with flu. So it's very important that NHS staff is vaccinated as well with the flu vaccination, as well as, of course, the patients.
Who should have the jabs?
So all the vulnerable patients, so patients who are over 75, patients with chronic diseases, so long-term lung conditions, heart conditions, diabetes, asthma, respiratory problems like chronic pulmonary disease, all of these conditions make these patients more vulnerable to complications of flu. And the complications of flu are, as you can imagine, the obvious one is pneumonia, and that can be quite debilitating and obviously, and as well, cause death as well.
Yeah, now Dr. Daisy Bennett said that old people, people with pulmonary obstructive disorder, people with asthma, but old people should have the jab. That's what she said, right? Remember, Burley said, who should have the jab? She said some very old people. She said people with what you would call chronic bronchial type conditions should have the jab. Remember this. This is vital now that you keep that in mind, right? Get the vaccine. Now, the pneumonia claim she made is proper scaremongering, this idea that flu lends to or can develop into pneumonia. That's incredibly, incredibly rare. This is an annual push by the UK media, right? You know, when you've done programmes like mine for many years, and this programme will be 3 years old on Friday, but I've been doing programs like it for a long time. The same stories prop up or even pop up every year at the same time. It's an annual push, this. They scaremonger the hell out of people in the autumn to make sure the uptake of the vaccine, the flu vaccine, meets their targets. And would you believe me if I told you the targets are not set by doctors, but are set by the manufacturers? They are. They own effectively the World Health Organization because of something called a revolving door system. Senior officials at the WHO, and I've done this, I've named these people before, have worked for Merck, Glaxo and all the rest of them. The World Health Organization sets the targets. Do you get me? Right? So Dr. Daisy Bennett, everybody in the NHS needs the vaccine. Old people, people that are prone to chesty, bronchial, breathing type things, Dr. Daisy Bennett. Now, pay attention. And know that I would never, ever, ever tell you a lie. What was extraordinary about this today is that obviously somebody at Sky News Central thought that young Dr. Daisy Bennett didn't do very well. And I shit you not, less than 45 minutes later, Burley reread the story, understandably, because they do the same stories every hour, right? Did they use the recording of Dr. Daisy Bennett? Fuck no, they didn't, because Daisy Bennett forgot her lines. This time Burley reread the story, and this time she interviewed Dr. David Lloyd. And David Lloyd had learned his lines better than the previous doctor.
Dear Doctor, thank you for joining us on Sky News this afternoon. How concerned are you about what's happening in Australia and subsequently what might happen here?
Oh, I think we should all get quite concerned. This is the time when we should be really working very hard to make sure that our population is protected against flu, because the health service is hardly in the best condition, so we want to have as few people admitted to hospital as we can. So over the next month or two is when everybody who is at risk of catching flu really ought to get to their GP or their pharmacist and get vaccinated straight away.
So why did David Lloyd come on the programme, really? Well, it's for the next question. Go on, Kay, ask the question again. Who should get it?
Who's that? Who's most at risk?
So anybody over the age of 65, anybody with a chronic illness, particularly liver disease, lung disease, heart disease, every child between the ages of 2 and 3, all the children in their first years.
Get in there!
I'm just going to have to look up all the lists now.
Look up the list, David.
School children, classes 1, 2, 3, and 4. Anybody that's living in a residential or a nursing home. Anybody, importantly, who is well but is a carer for someone who isn't very well. and all frontline health and social care workers should be vaccinated against the flu. That's very well. Very important. So we should all have 100% pickup. So we've extended the range of children that we'd like to vaccinate this year.
Oh, be Jesus, we've extended the range of children we'd like to vaccinate this year. We want to vaccinate grades 1, 2, 3, 4, old people, young people, people who work with elderly people. We want to vaccinate lollipop ladies. Fucking everybody needs to be vaccinated, says Dr. David Lloyd. Dr. David Lloyd. Dr. Daisy Bennett said, old people, anybody that's got asthma, bronchial stuff, that's about right, said Dr. Daisy Bennett. Listen to what Dr. David Lloyd says next about why it's so important to vaccinate more and more children. You're not going to believe it.
This year, because there was some very good research a couple of weeks ago which showed that if you vaccinate young children, it actually protects not only the children, but it protects the vulnerable elderly as well from getting the flu. So we want to vaccinate an awful lot more people this year so that we can stop them getting the flu.
Jump in anytime you want, Kay. Kay, anytime you want, jump in. He just said research shows, wait for it, that when children get vaccinated, old people don't get the flu. Now, I listened back to this 17 times today, then another 23 times, then I had a break, then I went for a wee, I came back, had a cup of tea, then I listened to it another 50 times. He just said research shows that when children get vaccinated, old people don't get the flu. Kay Burley should have jumped down his throat.
If you vaccinate young children, it actually protects not only the children, but it protects the vulnerable elderly as well from getting the flu. So we want to vaccinate an awful lot more people this year.
Yeah, I'm going to play it again, and I might keep playing it until 9 o'clock. This is incredible, this.
If you vaccinate young children, it actually protects not only the children, but it protects the vulnerable elderly as well from getting the flu. So we want to vaccinate an awful lot more people this year.
So Kay Burley jumped in, right? She said, well, I didn't come across that particular study. That sounds bizarre to me, David Lloyd. Would you like to explain that? She didn't. You know, you're shouting at the telly, go on, Kay. Ask him to explain that madness. Go on, Kay. What does Kay say? Kay says this.
Sounds as though almost everybody will need one of these injections. If you can't get to the GP, you mentioned pharmacy there. The pharmacist can do it as well?
Everybody needs it. Everybody wants some. Everybody needs it. Everybody in the world. It's amazing that not a journalistic bone, not only in her body, but in anybody working in mainstream media. Hey, David Lloyd, listen, we're sick of this bullshit, man. You're telling us today that the Aussies are worried about flu and they had a rough winter and we better watch out now. And what about the bird flu, the swine flu, the Asian flu? What about all that bollocks that never materialised, David? All of these scares. And we all rushed like feck to the chemist, to the doctor, to get jabbed with a toxic cloud of shit, which didn't do any good because there was no flu epidemic anyway. Probably done us more harm. Never materialised. Imagine how bad you have to be at your job. And I've never set myself on any pedestal as being any sort of special presenter. I'm not. Bloody well good at what I do. I'm not the best. I'm not special. Imagine a guy says, we're encouraging more children to get vaccinated because, well, recent research shows that when more children take it up, believe it or not, it prevents the elderly from, well, from getting the flu.
If you vaccinate young children, it actually protects not only the children, but it protects the vulnerable elderly as well from getting the flu. So we want to vaccinate an awful lot more people this year.
Yeah, he should be. I've got to be very careful. Libel exists. People can sue people for libel. Not going to say what should happen to him. What happens when people get vaccinated is whatever they are vaccinated with, they begin to shed. It's more likely that when people are carrying around the antibodies of the flu, it's more likely that people will begin to get the flu. Go into any GP surgery over the winter and you'll see the girls on reception. They're usually girls, I'm not being sexist, sneezing and coughing. I've seen it in my own surgery. Monumental bollocks that, eh? Recent evidence says children get vaccinated, it actually helps protect the elderly against the flu. No challenge. No challenge from Kay Burley. 27 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Because it's a mad world.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.com. Now. Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with orgone energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We're offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's VBRATION.com/Richie. Thank you.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back. 24 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Last year, barely 1% of the value of all payments in Sweden were made using coins or notes. Less than 1%. Of all payments made in Sweden in 2016 were made using coins and notes. Now, anybody who's been following the work of David Icke, particularly David Icke, over the years, will know about what's been going on in Sweden. Sweden is a guinea pig of a country where those behind the cashless agenda are using Sweden as an experiment to see whether there's any opposition to this, what needs to be done to get people to acquiesce to this. It's deadly. We've spoken about it so many times on the program before. That's a staggering thing. And those who listen to programs like this, who read David, of course, have been talking about this since Moses was a boy, will know that this is happening across the Far East, China, Japan, Cork City in Ireland has experimented with this, other countries in Europe. It is unbelievably sinister. So I came across a man called Bjorn Eriksson and thought that, it's about time we got him on the programme. He's a former president of Interpol and he's a former national police commissioner in Sweden. So he's a big cheese and he runs a group called Cash Rebellion. There is a name for it, but I can't pronounce it. It's Kontantupproret or something like that. But it means Cash Rebellion. He's running this group and he talks about identity theft, consumer debt and cyber attacks. He wants to prevent the rollout of this agenda. Now, as I said, he's a former president of Interpol. There's so much I would have liked to have spoken with him about in terms of Interpol, but we couldn't get into that today. And of course, being a former National Police Commissioner, I would have liked to talk to him about migrant problems, but I couldn't do that either because we agreed to talk about the cashless society. Very interesting man. Caught up with him today. It's not a long piece. It's only 15 minutes, but listen to what he had to say. This is Bjorn Eriksson in conversation with me a little bit earlier. Bjorn Eriksson, thanks so much for agreeing to come on the programme today. Tell us, what are the most worrying implications for you if Sweden was to go cashless by 2030? What are you most concerned about?
I think the major concerns are probably three. The first one being that this system is going to be rather vulnerable, both for in a situation when we might be hacked or when Russia or some other country want to do something, or to be a little bit of a one-liner, if Putin decides to do something, why occupy our islands? Just cut off our payment system, or we are going to have tremendous difficulties. Secondly, there are groups that are not ready or don't have the possibility to work because cash, after all, is the lender of last resource. You can dig them down, you can do a lot of things with them. But for elderly people, rural areas, etc., I'm afraid they're going to be left aside. And thirdly, this is a decision because you decided that this is up to the banks to decide. You took away the political implement, and that is a mistake because this is really a political question.
Isn't that the most serious of all the concerns, Bjorn? Handing complete control over an individual's finances, total control to a central bank. That would for me, would be the most scary of all those implications, right?
It scares me too, because the fact that everything is registered means that from an integrity point of view, you're going to be you're going to have difficulties. This could very well be amended as a fourth very strong reason for being very doubtful.
Because when you look at it from a basic point of view, whatever money is in my bank account today, Bjorn, belongs to me. And if I want to extract it from the bank, and if I want to hold it personally and take it out of the bank, I should be able to do that. But in a cashless society future, I wouldn't ever be able to physically take my cash.
That is a problem. If you take that to the situation today with an interest that is negative, I wonder what happened if you have, let's say, £2,000 and somebody from the bank calls you and says, nowadays, according to our opinion, you just have 19,000. The rest is a fee. How do you defend yourself? In the good old days, you could use cash to be sure that you are not just 100% forced to obey the banks. So it's a good point.
The government says, the Swedish government says, and other governments that are proposing this, and we're seeing this pop up in China, in Japan, in the Republic of Ireland, in Cork City, and in many other places. They say, by going cashless, we can increase the tax intake, we can tax people better and more fair. But that doesn't stand up either to me, Bjorn, because the biggest tax avoiders in our society are some of the biggest companies in the world. I'm not sure I agree with the tax implications. So when the government says tax is a big issue, what do you say to that?
For me, tax is a question that you decide upon in democratic order. And I don't think that is a particularly good argument, because after all, you are saying then that you control everything. My opinion is that you take a political decision and then you have to follow it. But that people can control your income 100% and put you in a situation where you can't defend themselves, that's my problem. Cash might be a little thing for many people, but it's the last resort, so to say, the way you can protect yourself. So I think I will stick to cash and use cards at the same time. It's my choice, not somebody else.
There's no doubt that the poorest people in society, the most vulnerable people, it's going to be a huge problem for them, Bjorn, right?
That is true, but not only for them. If you take my mother, 97 years of age, she would never be able to handle a card for different reasons. That means that she would have to leave all the details, all the figures, all the codes, etc., to somebody else to help her. And that is not fair. I think we have a responsibility for those people that have problems for different, say, to handle cards.
One of the things that we speak a lot about on this program is freedom of speech and privacy, Bjorn. And we know that certain financial institutions in recent times, they blocked payments to Wikipedia, of course. That's a huge concern, that, isn't it? I mean, along with freedom of speech, my right to support, whether it's an independent media organization or whether it's WikiLeaks, Wikipedia, whatever, I should have the right to do that. But of course, in a cashless society, the government, or well, basically the central bank, can say, no, you don't get to do that. That's a massive concern. That it's very much Orwellian, Bjorn, I would say.
You can see tendencies of that sort. We had a case in my country when somebody was delivering films you could rent, which was not particularly nice. And the decision from the card people was, we don't accept your cards any longer. Might be good from some sort of moral and other point of view, but still, they got a power that is doubtful if they should have. Just as an example, cash is a complement to the lease. So I see no reason to take away cash because that gives you as an individual a possibility to defend yourself.
Absolutely right, yeah. I mean, we have groups of people, not criminals, but people who work in activism, speaking up for the rights of people in Palestine and elsewhere in the world. And whether you agree with it or not, in a cashless society, those groups of people could be prevented from organising and could be prevented from doing what they do. That's kind of totalitarianism, I think. What do you think?
Well, I put it in maybe a similar way, but I will express it like this. It's my option if I use cards or cash. I see no reason to take away from me that option. I personally use this car. I use car a lot, but not 100%. So it's that possibility that you choose as an individual. That's my point.
But not to labour this point, Bjorn, but isn't that the real... What I'm trying to get at is, for me, what I see to be the real reason behind introducing the cashless agenda. And I would go as far as to suggest that maybe the introduction of the single currency in Europe was maybe a pretext to all of this. Do you connect those dots? Can you see that the introduction of the single currency in Europe was basically part of this agenda to ultimately maybe bring in a global cashless currency? What do you think?
I don't think that was the intention from the beginning. And actually, for me, it's the important thing is not if there is a mean person trying to cheat us. I think a lot of people believe in this because it's easy, it's simple, etc., etc. But the problem is, it might be simple, easy, etc., but it has a drawback that a lot of people don't realize. And I think that's good enough to make sure that you have, you should have cash as an alternative for so many years you can see ahead.
You're giving the financial networks of the world the benefit of the doubt, Bjorn, when in recent history, you know, recent history would suggest that the financial powerhouses of the world, they certainly don't operate in our best interests. So why would we trust that they're operating in our interests now?
It could be, but for me, I mean, we are many people that don't like the option to take away cash. And everybody can believe in his religion, so to say. But for me, the most important thing is that you take away an option and you take away a possibility to go and use cash because you like it. That's good enough for me. I don't have to amend that people are mean, etc. I don't think they thought this through. And I think a lot of card lovers really love cars. Good for me. But give me the possibility to use cash when I wish.
Well, listen, I totally understand that and I respect it. I respect the reason you're concerned about it and your organisation, which I will tweet links to when the when the programme is live. But the point I'm making is it's very important. There are huge implications here for freedom of speech, for personal expression, for the rights to express who you are and the rights to spend your money however you want to spend it. There are huge implications for that. It goes beyond an inconvenience, is what I'm saying, basically.
Yes, and I think what could be an extra point, if somebody is, when we are listening to this discussion, is why is this introduced without an open debate? It just happens because the banks have been given the possibility to put up the rules of the game, so to say. And that is, from a democratic point of view, not particularly good.
Bjorn, who's responsible? Because we, again, and I mentioned this to your lovely assistant, Josephine, today, speaking with her over email. you just touched on the most important thing. Banks have basically taken control of this decision, and they're being allowed to do that. Who's responsible for that then? Is it the Swedish government or successive Swedish governments?
I think you could put the blame there, but I also think that the central bank were a little bit careless 2005 when they accepted that this should from then onwards be a question for the four or five major banks rather than the central bank itself. So I think they have to share the blame, so to say.
And what about your organisation then? How do you go about trying to get this on the agenda in Sweden? Because you're nearly there now. You're nearly at the point where it's cashless. So how does your organisation go about getting this on the agenda?
We are trying to have a lot of other organisations to join us, the Organization for Retired People, Security Industry, etc., etc., etc. And we are trying the best we can to make this a question for the general election next year, because I think the trick here is that to put the question on the political agenda so there is a debate. And it's my hope that political parties will realize that people are rather upset about what's happening, because that's my feeling. So the goal is try to get this as a, get the thing as a political question.
I think you're doing a good job. The final point I want to make is, look, I've got very strong opinions about banks and the power to create money. We know we live in a fractional reserve banking system. Banks loan money into existence, which is an extraordinary power, by the way, that our governments have given banks to create money out of thin air. And basically own, banks basically control society anyway, from top to bottom, because the person who controls the money supply controls life, and that's the situation we're in. I believe, Bjorn, that back in 2008, we should have allowed banks to become bankrupt. We should have allowed banks to disappear, and we should have let, you know, new banks could have been formed, and we could have taken ownership of banks. In a future cashless society, are we basically giving banks immunity from anything? Immunity from prosecution, immunity from bankruptcy. In this future society, banks become untouchable, right?
I see your point, and I can't judge that, but I could put it in this way. The fact that they control the payment system is a major problem in itself.
Well, I wish your organisation all the very best, Bjorn. As you can probably guess, I'm very, very much against the introduction of...
I haven't missed that.
You haven't missed that much, right? So you understand that. So we link to your organisation. We do have listeners in Sweden, of course, and we ask people to support you there. I appreciate you giving us the time today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That was Bjorn Eriksson. Now, he's a former National Police Commissioner in Sweden and a former president of Interpol, so you could hear there that he was being pretty careful with the answers that he gave. And his group, which I mentioned earlier on, and I will tweet a link to it, even though the website is in Swedish, in a few minutes' time, are trying to roll back or reverse this process, which is nearly complete anyway. You know, he mentioned at the very beginning, didn't he, that, you know, he's concerned that Putin's Russia might try to hack the Swedish financial system. Of course, the biggest threat to the people of Sweden in a cashless society is not the Russian government or the North Korean government or anybody else, but it's the banking system that will own in... Well, lock, stock and barrel will own society, will own the country if it doesn't own it already. You know, and we talked about there, and I tried to press upon him the point that individual liberty, individual freedom disappears out the window the minute that you must pay for something digitally, you must use your phone. Of course, the phone rollout is all part of this agenda as well. You know, the ability to congregate, the ability to support something you think should be supported. All of these things, of course, come into play when you talk about the cashless society. Anybody who's read David Icke, the Perception Deception, or Phantom Self, or any of David's books, he's been talking about this for years, and it seems to be gathering pace now. Last year, 1% only of transactions in Sweden right across society were made using cash. It's exactly 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour. We're going to have some music, I think, when we come back, some comment, but now it's some music on your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. It's Tuesday, September the 12th, 2017. Thank you for choosing the programme. Always great to have your company. Keep the tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter.
Show in association with davidicke.com.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with orgone energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We are offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's VBRATION.com/Richie. Thank you.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back live on DavidIke.com on RichieAllen.co.uk. Fab Radio 2. It is your Richie Allen show live. Live! As if you don't know. Hi to Charlotte. Hi to Faisal. Bass Ninja Martin. Noakes. How you doing, Martin? Mark Morrison. To Shona Dryden. How you doing, Shona? Lance Burkett as well. Fluffles. How you doing, Fluffles? Lot of activity on Twitter this evening. Nice to know that somebody's listening. Hi to Busy as well. To Steve. Hi to Mark, who sent me a lovely email earlier on. To Kevin as well. To Angela. How you doing, Angela? I can never pronounce your surname, Angela. It's Angela or Angela Guidolin. That's about as far as I can get with that one. Angela. Hi to Bethany as well. And hi to you. Hi to James Gates, who sent me an interesting picture. My personal flu vaccine, says James. And it's a picture of decongestant capsules, even. Say it again. Decongestant capsules. So thank you for tweeting me. Tweet comments. And when I get a moment, I will mention them. Anna Cannon, the founder of Regret.ie, a concern group, set up to ask for an inquiry into the startling, the terrifying, it must be said, the dreadful illnesses, fatigue, the wasting illnesses that girls who have received the HPV vaccine Gardasil, those girls have been experiencing these symptoms for some years now. There's no doubt about this. Anna Cannon set regret.ie up because it happened to her own daughter. We spoke about this on the programme, I think originally about 18 months ago. It was just before last Christmas, the last time Anna was on. A lot has happened since then, and a lot has happened in the last few days. So let's get her on the programme. While we do that, let's take some more music. I've got some Van Morrison. Bit of Van Morrison for you this Tuesday. Anna Cannon is next. Pay attention to that, back in a minute.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars above in your eyes. Fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. Yet all the night's magic seem to whisper and hush. Yet all the songs shine in your blush. Can I just have one more morning dance with you, my love? Or can I just make some more romance with you, my love? Well, I wanna make love to you tonight. I can't wait till the morning has come. Yet I know now the time is just right, and straight into my arms you will run. And when you come, my heart will be waiting to make sure that you're never alone. There and then all my dreams will come true, dear. There and then I will make you my own. And every time I touch you, you just tremble inside. Then I know how. Can't hide. Can I just
Moondance from Van Morrison on the Richie Allen Show. Let's get rid of the music then. I mentioned earlier on in the programme the Irish Times. Today's edition of the Irish Times, Paul Cullen writing, the headline, almost 650 girls needed medical intervention after the HPV vaccine. I mentioned this earlier. 650 girls reported requiring medical intervention or treatment after receiving HPV vaccine. That's according to data collected by Ireland's Medicines Watchdog. That's the Health Products Regulatory Authority, which received nearly 1,100 reports of adverse reactions and events associated with the use of the vaccine. Now, 59% of the reports, or 648 cases, were considered serious, meaning, according to the article, they included circumstances where patients required intervention, such as a review by their GP, treatment for their symptoms, or both. The majority of reports we have received have been consistent with the expected pattern of adverse effects for the vaccine as described in the currently approved product information, according to a spokeswoman. That is what they say. They always fall back on that. The reports we get are consistent with the expected pattern of adverse effects for the vaccine. Now, many, many of these cases, girls experienced fainting episodes, which are hardly normal, or is hardly not serious. It's obviously very serious. HPV, human papillomavirus, is marketed as Gardasil. It is alleged that it protects against cervical and other forms of cancer. But for some years now, girls who have received the vaccine have developed serious health problems after getting it in secondary school. Now, Regret is an organisation. I think they're a fantastic bunch of people. We're not hiding anything here. I have great time for the people involved with Regret. They were set up because many parents of Irish girls said their girls were going through these horrible effects, these side effects, these serious illnesses. And a spokeswoman, or the spokesperson, we'll say spokeswoman, it's the right thing to say, for Regret, is an old friend of ours, spoke to us at great length in the past about her own daughter. We're not going to get into that tonight. Those interviews are on YouTube, on the Richie Allen Show. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend, Anna Cannon. Anna, welcome back.
Good evening, Richie. Thank you for having me on again.
It's always an honour to have you on. Before we talk about the Times article, nice to see Claire Daly, TD, has come out against the disgusting things said by the HSE, and they are disgusting, saying that people like you are emotional terrorists. Great to see Claire Daly do that. You might let our listeners know what it is that Claire was saying.
Yeah, well, it's very encouraging to see one TD standing up for over 400 Irish teenage girls who suffered the very cluster of symptoms that are listed in the manufacturer's patient information leaflet as possible side effects. So they are mirrored worldwide, and this is something that isn't covered in the Irish media. So we don't talk in Ireland about 700 girls in Colombia who are now taking a class action. There is a class action in Japan. Their uptake of Gardasil is now 1%. So they are no longer recommending that as part of their immunization scheme. 2,200 girls in Denmark. The UK, I just saw the figures today, are their reports in the equivalent of the HPRA system over there. There's over 2,500 of their reports are considered serious adverse events. So the Irish government are trying to portray this as an Irish issue, but really it is a worldwide situation that has developed following the rollout of this Gardasil HPV vaccine. So Claire Daly has been a great supporter in terms of listening to her constituents and forwarding on these young girls' concerns, their families' concerns, whilst the door is pretty much shut now on Regret Parents. Regret is a parent-led support group, so it's not really an organisation. It's a parent-led support group consisting of parents only who have daughters who have experienced very serious health effects following the vaccination, girls who were previously healthy. And yeah, Claire is, I have to take my hat off to her, under the severe pressure that has come down from the HC, Tony O'Brien, and the Minister for Health, who asked parents to butt out. Anyone who doesn't have a medical degree should butt out of this conversation, which is difficult for us parents who now feel that every door is being slammed shut in terms of not being able to present to the Oireachtas Committee, the Health and Children's Committee, who have covered this and have a very one-sided occasion recently. We had a chance to speak to them back in December 2015. This was never really taken care of or responded to. We never got a response to the concerns that we raised. And the only two concerns that we have raised as a parent group is that, one, these girls who mirror symptoms of 10,000 of kids worldwide following this vaccine are investigated independently so that we can find out exactly what's going on with them and offer them treatment and help so that they can get better. And two, that the patient information leaflet, which the manufacturer states very clearly, should be read by all parents and patients before this vaccination has to be read. And that's still being withheld by the HSE from the school packs containing the consent forms. So that's very serious, you know. The one thing I would correct you on there is I'm not the founder of Regress.
No, I shouldn't say that. I was going to correct myself. My apologies.
I came into Regress in August 2015, whilst Regress was formed by a handful of parents back in May 2015. So I was a little bit later than that, but it doesn't really matter in the overall scheme of things.
No, but it's important to correct me. You're absolutely right, Anna. And I want to say this to you. You found each other, the parents of these girls, and you have your lives, you have your jobs, you're going about your business. You didn't ask for any of this. It landed on you. And the mirrored symptoms you talked about there across the board, all these girls with these horrendous debilitating illnesses, you go and ask a question. It's all you've ever done, and I've watched you closely from afar, even before we spoke a year and a half ago or whenever it was. You've asked the question, and you've asked for help, and you've asked for an inquiry. Did anything prepare you and the parents who make up Regret for the sort of, and again, I'm not trying to be over dramatic here, the horrendous things that you've had to put up with, not only from the Irish media, but you mentioned there a minute ago, you know, non-qualified people, people on social media and elsewhere calling you every name under the sun for asking a question. Did anything prepare you for that? Did you have any idea that was coming?
Nothing can prepare you for that. I mean, especially people like me who have been outspoken, because you feel that it is your responsibility as a parent. And, you know, I'm seeing girls now who, we have a girl, for example, who has had 40 to 50 bouts of pancreatitis following the third shot of Gardasil. She was perfectly healthy before the vaccine. Now there is talks about a transplant or that pancreas has to be removed. There is a life limit on those occasions, and it's very, very serious. We have other girls who have seizures ongoing and who are damaging their head as they land in pavements, streets, taken in and out by ambulances during school hours. You know, obviously you're trying to get your child to school if there is any possibility, because the mental effect of being chronically ill and losing all your friendships and not being able to stay in touch with, you know, some kind of social side of your life is very difficult. So these are life-threatening situations. So these are situations that will result in either one of them with brain damage, or the other one could be potentially fatal. So if you feel that it is your absolute responsibility to speak out. So when you do speak out, I mean, even my own case has been horrendous. I'm quite nervous doing the interview today because I've been absolutely slaughtered in the media to the extent that, I mean, this week alone, I've been called a predator, a murderer, I have blood on my hands, a vax tard, a flat earther, you know, anti-vaxxer is a regular one. It's almost funny considering we are probably the most pro-vax parents in the sense that we were Merck's best customers. You know, we signed the consent form for this black triangle product when it came out because we thought we were doing the right thing, you know, and now the emotional terrorist accusation. And that's really difficult mentally for me as a mom, you know, knowing that I signed up for this, that I thought was going to be the best thing ever for my then 12-year-old daughter, and watching what it did to her life. And she's now 6 years down the line. Her last hospitalization was only in May, where she was hospitalized 10 days, which is a relatively long time considering the hospital service, and, you know, they want to shift beds. And she was very sick. And I actually thought at one point they was going to lose her. So they're now actively targeting, because the directives are coming from the top. You know, when you have people like Tony O'Brien calling parents emotional terrorists, that's going to have a direct effect. That's allowing people that are sitting online, keyboard warriors all day, every day, throwing abuse, not only at parents, but also on directly at the girls. And, you know, that's pretty hard to comprehend when we're trying to teach our kids, especially in secondary school, that they should be, you know, staying within remits on social media. And social media harassment and bullying is unacceptable, but apparently it's completely unacceptable when it comes to targeting parents with vaccine-injured children.
I remember when we spoke, I remember you were ridiculed and abused for hanging out with us, with David Icke and the Richie Allen Show. Well, you see, we live in a post-truth world. Truth doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about the fact that maybe all of the women who are connected with Regret maybe never heard of David Icke, certainly never heard of the Richie Allen Show. It didn't matter that we, through my then producer, reached out to you guys. It didn't matter. That was another stick that was used to beat you with. It was coming in from all angles. And it wasn't just coming in from Stonewall Muppets on Twitter, of which there are millions. You had people like that Grimes clown who was invited to come on this programme several times and didn't have the courage to do so. A physicist who works occasionally for the BBC. These people claiming that the women were tantamount to child abusers. I mean, I've seen abuse over the years, Anna, but, you know, for people like you, asking a simple question, and you always maintained, listen, we're not anti this, we're not anti that. Our daughters are grievously unwell. We need to know what happened to them. And you've maintained that message since I've known you, before that, and yet they came after you like that.
It's unfair, because we never asked for the vaccine to be withdrawn. We said that we wanted a safer vaccination program. We did suggest that it probably would be a good idea to look at, considering, I mean, we were looking at the HPRA records for 2015 and the second half of 2015, just to give an example, of out of 90 reports into the reporting system of adverse events, there was 21 seizures. You know, the HSE are telling moms and dads in Ireland that there are no side effects of this vaccine, but we know that no vaccine or medication is 100% safe. And when it does go wrong, if you're not seen to look after the kids that are potentially experiencing side effects and treat them in a respectful manner and deal with parents in a meaningful way and include the full risk information. I mean, who is going to sign up for a relatively new vaccination based on when they're seeing how parents are being treated? And for example, what they've started to do now is that they are stalking social media accounts of these young girls and picking out pictures of them on a good day. Because, I mean, which teenager is going to put up a picture in the hospital bed? You know, they're going to put up the pictures where they're looking good and they're wearing makeup. And then they're claiming that they're faking. So this is being passed around. In my own daughter's case, it's been passed around to journalists. It's had a huge mental effect on her, obviously, already dealing with documented chronic illnesses, because these girls have comprehensive medical records and there is no way they can get around that, you know? So, yeah, you're dealing with the guilt of having signed the form, thinking that you did the right thing, watching your kids struggle, many for 6-7 years now. And now you've, by speaking out, you've also made them a target, you know, and that's
evil.
It's uncomprehendable. I can't even, you know, I'm almost crying saying it, but you know, it's unhuman, you know, it's your life is just destroyed from every angle. And you wake up in the morning and you just, first thing you think about is, what are they going to do to me today?
So these girls,
is she going to be okay?
So these girls, these young girls who have these horrendous symptoms, as we know, and we know they have, you know, we did our research, we know you're telling the truth. It's beyond that now, it's way beyond that. So on a better day, I'm out with me mates, I might go to a fast food place, I might go to the cinema, might take a picture because it's good to be out on a better day, and that is being taken and used against the girls by people saying that they're a bunch of liars. That's how low it has become, Anna, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I can give a very good example of that. My daughter she had back-to-back infections. And last year, it became so bad that it was every 3 weeks, you know, she had a serious strep throat infection on top of her normal symptoms, which would be you know, daily headaches, often severe headaches, muscle fatigue, intracellular bacterial infections, you know, numerous documented health issues that we're trying to deal with on a daily basis. And then she gets an infection and she's hospitalized and it becomes very serious. So serious that you have doctors running in and out and starting to look very worried about going into a situation where the blood pressure goes so low that is starting to bleep everywhere, you know. And this happens. We had about 3 or 4 days that were extremely serious. And this kid then comes out of the acute phase eventually, and the news is running in the ward, and it's the TV3 and RTE running with a fake storyline that was the latest, you know, before the emotional terrorism, and sobbing in the hospital bed, because obviously when you're in that situation and you're this kind of victim blaming has a decremental effect on their motivation to go on and to, you know, to try and fight this. So I've had to produce letters stating that her doctors, that her physical health is now getting seriously affected by the mental pressure, for example, because we're dealing with this age group that is already vulnerable, and, you know, it's only that much they can take, and it's only that much we can take as parents, because nobody's made of steel, you know. So I mean, and on the other side you have the HPRA system, which is an official system that is there to look at adverse events, and there's 354 cases that they stated on prime time back in November have been unresolved. They're not resolved. So clearly there's 354 cases in November of last year that were not resolved on that system.
Let me just remind.
On one hand that we don't exist and these girls don't exist, and on the other hand that these cases are not resolved.
And I must remind our listeners, the programme Anna is referring to is a national television programme on RTE, the Irish national broadcaster. It's a current affairs programme called Primetime. And it's obviously a very, very famous and very well-known programme. There's a lot we could say about Primetime. Anna Cannon is on the line to us from Dublin. Regret.ie, if you do happen to be listening to this in Ireland and you're affected by this in any way, there's a lot of information on regret.ie and contact details there as well.
We're also on Facebook.
And on Facebook, of course, and I must get the Facebook link now, which I'll do in a second and tweet it out. So,
thank you.
So Paul Cullen's article today saying that 650 girls reporting a medical intervention requiring one, 59% of those were considered serious, fainting. This is very, very serious. The European Medicines Agency has tried to dismiss this as being, you know, part of the accepted risk. The benefits outweighed the risks. I think this is a very positive article, this coming out today. What do you think of it? I mean, I know on the one hand they're saying these things happen, but it doesn't really matter because these are the accepted risks. But it's still out there that so many girls had this terrible fainting episode after receiving the dose. What do you think, Anna?
Yeah, well, it's positive to see a headline like that on the front page of the Irish Times. And the Irish Times haven't asked Regret for comment so far in terms of but they've been quite quick to slate Regret parents through, I think they're almost 2 years at it now. So, you know, that was positive in a way. But when you go into the article and it's kind of brushes over, then it says, oh, no, most of these are faintings. But then, of course, you wouldn't visit your doctor or require to be picked up by an ambulance if you had a fainting at vaccination time. So we can presume that these are more serious. And how I know that is that the HPRA deal with, if I make a report to the HPRA, for example, I can give you an example of an 18-year-old girl who's experienced epileptic form of seizures 20 minutes after the vaccination, and she was subsequently hospitalized 7 days. That was converted by the HPRA in preferred terms to convulsion. So that's the only word that you will find on the HPRA database. So then we have another two girls in the group who had reported nausea, ongoing nausea, which obviously would affect their appetite. Those two girls were converted into eating disorders. So now you have a system that almost looks fraudulent, because this data is reported into the WHO system. all the various pharmacovigilance, you know, monitoring agencies in Europe. So if they're not correct, if, for example, if a child had pancreatitis as one of their 25 listed symptoms, and you stick in an eating disorder in the middle of that, you're going to look at that and think, okay, but that's obviously the problem there. So, you know, there is a requirement for people like Paul Cullen and other journalists to not only take around, you know, a figure of 654, but to dig a little bit deeper into that system. Because I have, and I've seen the HPRA system, and I've seen the cases that are in there. And when you look at some of them, I mean, you're talking, there are cases in there with 30 side effects listed under one person, you know? So I think there was an average of about 4 per person when I looked at it last.
So he shouldn't take the word of the authorities in Ireland. He should do a bit more research and find out, are these fainting episodes or are they more serious? You said that you've been able to unearth that some of these cases involved a lot more than fainting. I just want to make this point. My friend and somebody who helps me out with the programme, Jean-Anne Crowley, who's based in Dublin most of the time, makes this point to me now, and it's good. It's a point you've made on the programme before, Anna, yourself. Why on earth would anybody be inclined to protect their daughters against sex they may not have? That's a moral thing, by the way, she says. The giving of this vaccine presupposes that teenage daughters will be indulging in random sexual encounters between 14 and 21. Very few will. So what's the reason for giving it or insisting that your daughters have a vax to combat something they may never be involved in? I mean, that's just a brilliant point.
I'd have to be careful with that argument because we have also been slated, and there was a communications. We found out that there was communications in Leinster House where we were being actively portrayed as some sort of right-wing, you know, right-wing organization who has an issue with young girls that are eventually going to be sexually active. And the way I would look at that is that, the way I would put it is like this. If you have a 12-year-old girl, like my own daughter, for example, and she is one of the unfortunate girls that experience side effects from this vaccine, and you know that your child, well, you know in reflection that your child became sexually active very late. So that wasn't an issue. And then you know that the HSE omitted telling you that the vaccine hasn't been proven lasting beyond 5 or at the max 8 years.
Yeah.
And you now have a child suffering long-term chronic illnesses that you don't know if they're going to carry for life because you have very little support. You know, you're going from doctor to doctor. You're getting various views and diagnoses. And you then really question yourself because then you say, what was the point in giving that in the first place? I now know that she has basically no cover left from the vaccine, but these side effects are, you know, there potentially for life. And I think that's what many parents in regret struggle with, you know. They struggle with the fact that, I spoke to a mom today whose daughter was picked up by an ambulance yesterday, again from school. She has been suffering seizures now 5 years solid. She's written to Simon House. She's asked, could she come in and present to the Oireachtas Health and Children's Committee? The child is constantly on a stretcher. I've seen it happening, you know. She has no chance to put her hands out when she blacks out. It happens very quickly. The head is taking massive hits every time, and this happened only again yesterday. And, I mean, you'd look at a child like that and say, was it really worth it? Would I have given the vaccine if I would have known that this could happen? No, I wouldn't. Of course I wouldn't. And would I, as a parent, give the vaccine now, looking at how the HZ are abusing parents of children who are chronically ill, for whatever we think about the causation link, whether we think the vaccine caused it or not. I mean, is it right to abuse parents with vaccine-injured children? It's not really acceptable, you know. It's not acceptable to abuse, mentally abuse, because that's what you have to call it, a child who has any illness. You know, you wouldn't see that happening with a child that's cancer ill or terminally ill in any form or even chronically ill. But for a parent who has a vaccine-injured child, their lives don't matter.
I just want to make one point, because, and then I want to pick you up on that, because it's massive. The response and the reaction from the media and from the state is incredible. But a number of listeners, as well as Jean Anne, have made the point, and I understand why you said it's an area you don't want to go down, and I totally respect that, that it's actually incredible when you think about the vaccine, you know, and I understand why listeners want to, why they want me to labour that point. You know, the whole idea of it is ultimately to protect adolescent children from sex, from indiscriminate, you know, sexual behaviour. It's quite crazy. And I spent a Sunday View programme last year when I did my own research into the statistics in Ireland and found that, you know, a girl in the Republic of Ireland has more chance of getting hit by a falling piano from a helicopter and dying than she does of dying from cervical cancer. It's just extraordinary.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's really, it's crazy because, but that's what they cleverly did. You know, they've marketed this as a cervical cancer vaccine, when in fact it is a vaccine against a sexually transmitted viral strains. And the very concerning part for parents as well is that this vaccine only covers four strains of HPV virus strains. Two of those are potentially cancerous, but 90% plus of those would be cleared by a healthy immune system anyway. It's like it's part of the body's, the system's normal flora. So they don't tell us that it's a vaccine that combats STIs, because obviously parents of 12-year-old girls might say, you know, really, is this really necessary and do I want to take the risk? If they had the risks available to them, which the HSE are not really forthcoming with either. So, you know, these viral strains have the possibility of mutating. So that's called type replacement. What that means is you create a void now where you protect against two cancerous strains, but not all. So that means that other strains have the potential to become more aggressive and fill the void that has been created by the vaccine. So this is another huge concern for parents, where your girl is now potentially at a higher risk of contracting more serious strains. So, you know, as a parent, when you research this, and I do obviously do a lot of research, it's extremely difficult because I'm sitting here researching this from credible sources. Obviously, there is a lot of peer-reviewed information out there now as well. And yet, I have to relay this to other parents, but it has a direct effect on my own daughter. So that's pretty heartbreaking, you know, to learn all these things that can potentially happen to your previously perfectly healthy, sporty child who is now experiencing all these issues, and potentially with an affected, because a lot of these girls now have either weakened immune systems or affected immune systems that are over-responding or under-responding, and that means that they are going to experience problems when, you know, if they were unfortunate and they had, for example, leukemia or, you know, even contracting shingles in the future and their immune system is hit, this could have a huge effect on them. Or in my own daughter's case, in her last hospital stay, where an infection that should have been very easy for the body to handle became life-threatening.
There's a load of questions on this about where do you, you know, where do you get help in terms of moving this on? And we'll come to that in a minute. It's 27 minutes to the top of the hour. Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, broadcast in association with davidicke.com. We're live on Fab Radio 2 here in this great city of Manchester, live on TuneIn Radio as well. A lot of people making the point, and we're going to move on from it because I've asked Anna, and she's answered it, and I respect her answer, that it is an absolutely insane vaccine when the vaccine was manufactured to protect against the virus that the girl could only get if she was to be having indiscriminate sex with strangers. A number of you making that point. I agree with you wholeheartedly. We've talked about that. We're going to move on from that now. It's regret.ie if you're in the Republic of Ireland or anywhere else, even if you're in the UK and you want information on this, because this will be affecting people here in the UK. We spoke today for about 45 to 50 minutes, Anna, and I've only known you through the programme. I won't pretend to know you personally, but I felt dreadful after the conversation today because I felt that you and you're representing the other families when you do programs like this. You seem lost, and I wonder, and listeners are asking me to ask you, where can you go? Who's going to help you take this on? What authority or what figure in authority, what medical man or woman is going to help you take this on? Because basically, you kind of hinted to me today, privately and on the programme tonight, that it's kind of just been locked down in Ireland. Nobody wants to know. The health authorities don't want to know. The media don't want to know. What do you do from here about this? Where do you go?
Yeah, it's a very good question, because Regret has been very respectful in how we've communicated with the world. And, you know, we feel that we, as parents, we've jumped through all the hoops now. We've tried to communicate with our public representatives as their constituents. We have tried to give our side to the story to the media. It's been on a complete lockdown the last 12 months. I mean, basically, the questions that the media need to start asking is what's happening worldwide, you know? Why is the Irish media not telling us about 700 girls in Colombia in a class action? And why are they not talking about the EMA complaint, the Cochrane complaint to the EMA, where they questioned the entire process of how that investigation was conducted? And, you know, why are they not asking the HSE why they are willfully withholding the patient information leaflet from the school packs? Why are those questions not asked? Why are they not fine combing the HPRA reporting system? I mean, all the answers are there, but they're just not covering that. Instead, they're going right at the Regret group, portraying us as some sort of shady organization, you know, and obviously the anti-vax, which is the word that I had actually never heard before I came into this process. And I find it very derogatory in general, because, you know, we have the right to question decisions that have a huge impact at our children, you know, and especially with the informed consent. So where do we go from here? I feel that we are all quite lost, and we're all it's very difficult to see how you can. I mean, we tried the pleading and the communicating and the discussing and the putting pressure on our individual TDs to raise their voice. And some of them, in fairness, have. Now that door has been shut also. So I do feel that a lot of families now will progress into looking at legal action, because it's probably the only way. It's probably the only way that parents can secure some sort of future for their daughters that may not be able to ever hold on a job, you know, or that may have their fertility affected and need IVF in the future. The kids that did lose out on their entire second level education, you know, we have girls that never went back to school, that are lying in their house for 4 years now. And then we have girls who have been able to hold on to their education, but it's on a week-to-week basis. And, you know, they would tell us that they just don't know when it's going to happen and how it's going to happen. They don't know how the next hour is going to be. They don't know if they're going to be able to sit a lecture that day or if they're going to be out for 3 days.
Can I mention something that's really important? You and I spoke about this earlier on today. I've read as much as you can read about some of the big pharmaceutical giants in the world. And we know a lot about Merck. And one of the things that often goes unmentioned, and I want our listeners to listen carefully to what I'm going to say. It's only going to take me about 20 seconds to say this. This is vital. We're talking about a company, Merck, which is a criminal organisation. It is a crime family. Now, I could spend all day talking about Vioxx and other drugs that they tested on children and men and women and poor people in third world countries. They tested Gardasil in India, and they did that without the consent of the children, the street children they tested it on. Children died there. Children given this poisonous, toxic crap, because that's what it is, died in that country. This is widely reported back at the turn of 2015, late 2014, early 2015. This company has a history of testing drugs on the poorest people in the world and killing them while doing it, and paying fines that amount to nothing when you think of what their balance sheet looks like and the revenue that they generate. Who in the name of Christ would take the word of a criminal cartel over what looks like now thousands and thousands of children and their families worldwide? That's what you're dealing with. I'm not saying this for dramatic effect or to big myself up. This is a crime family. Who does that? Who gets children in India with nothing and sticks them with that shit and kills them doing it? Who does that? And you want to believe these people over Anna Cannon and the 700 families in Colombia and the families in Denmark and the families in Spain? It's sickening.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Spain, because there was a court case in Spain not long ago where they always say that it has never been proven anywhere in the world that there was a serious side effect. But a young girl of 13, I think, died following the second dose of this vaccination, the HPV vaccination. And her family was awarded a settlement in court, in the Spanish courts, where they judged that this vaccine had absolutely contributed to her death, because she also suffered from asthma. And we have learned now from the HPRA statement on primetime as well, that where they said that asthma has contributed to anaphylactic reactions. Anaphylactic reaction is a life-threatening reaction. So, you know, that's another very valid fact that is withheld from parents signing up for this vaccine. And worse than that, we now have the HSE writing to schools every term, instructing principals only to distribute HSE approved materials to their parents. So this means no patient information leaflet, including all the risks. Mm-hmm. So that goes out regularly. And now they've added a new paragraph where they say that any indemnity issues that arise from this will be dealt with by the HSE. So that indicates that there could be, you know, a liability.
I hope we've not lost Anna. Are you there, Anna? The call might have dropped out momentarily. It's 19 minutes to the top of the hour. Are you back? She's not. We'll give her a chance to come back. Tell you what we'll do. We'll take a very quick break. And hopefully on the other side of that, we'll be reconnected with Anna Cannon. Back in a minute.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with orgone energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We are offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's VBRATION.com/Richie. Thank you.
Welcome back to the programme. I think, Anna, we're back. Sorry we got disconnected there momentarily. But you're back. Listen, we've got about 7 minutes left on this. I will continue. The last I will say on these idiots, because I've had a number of tweets from people about various people, David Robert Grimes and others, who've been invited on this programme. to debate with me why it is they believe that so many hundreds and hundreds of families are imagining the things their daughters are going through. We'll continue to invite them on and ask them to come on and debate with Anna and debate with other people. We were talking just before we got cut off about where we go, and you did hint at legal action. I'd love to see that, Anna. I mean, I don't know what the personal circumstances are, the financial circumstances of the many families, but wouldn't it be lovely if the money could be raised to take a case against the Irish Minister for Health? You know.
Yeah, I mean, you would be looking at particularly the issue of informed consent and how the HSE have conducted themselves in this. I mean, for example, we have now had the HSE writing to every single school, secondary school principal in Ireland over the past years. Every time there is a vaccination round, they receive a letter to state that no other information but HSE approved information should be given to parents. And now they have included a paragraph where they're saying that any indemnity issues should be forwarded by the schools to the HSE. So, I mean, there's a liability issue there for the schools, obviously, as well, because they are also forwarding on incorrect information. They're forwarding on information that is not fulfilling the legal rights for informed consent. So there is no full risk information included. And the manufacturers do state that this must be read. The patient information leaflet must be read before the vaccination. And now they've gone as far as, I actually only found out after I called today, Richie, that the HSE have now taken it upon themselves to write to all pharmacies in Ireland. And I've just skimmed through. It includes intro letters, posters to put in the windows, brochures to hand out. And in this, they say that all first years should receive the vaccine. And then they go on to say in paragraph 4, I think, in the letter, they state that there is evidence that known health professionals can lead to an increased uptake. We would be grateful if your pharmacist would promote the vaccine. I mean, that's almost leaning towards coercion at this stage.
It is, of course, yeah. Yeah.
You know, we've had a couple of pharmacists contacting us saying, this is actually getting out of hand. You have to question why. Why are they pushing so hard on the uptake rates? And more so, how are the HSE justifying leaving 400, I'd say it's closer to 450 girls now, Irish girls, in this state? How can they leave this group of girls without an investigation and at the same time discredit them? I mean, wouldn't the easiest thing be to investigate them to find out exactly what's going on? Wouldn't that be the easiest way to settle this once and for all?
Yeah, they would have rushed to do that. I mean, I remember the Irish Health Ministry itself, the department, was summoned to a meeting by the World Health Organization. And I mentioned at the very top of the programme how the WHO is staffed with people who used to represent or work for the pharmaceutical companies, you know, executive positions in the pharmaceutical companies. They end up working at the World Health Organization. It's incredible. It's beyond revolving door. And to think that the Irish Health Ministry could be threatened by the World Health Organization, you know, demanding, why are you not selling as much of this? Anna, we've done programs here about how foreign aid, I mean, we talk all the time about foreign aid here. There are thousands of people on the streets of this country homeless, not because they're drug addicts or anything else. There's nothing wrong. I have great sympathy with people addicted to drugs, but people who are on the streets because economically they can't survive. And yet we give millions and millions and millions in foreign aid. And again, just a cursory little bit of research and you will find the aid doesn't reach third world countries in the form of seeds, bread, milk, clothes, whatever. It comes to them in the form of medicines and, you've guessed it, Anna, vaccinations.
Yeah, I mean, it's very absurd when I often think about this. I mean, how do you get 10,000? I mean, it's over 50,000 reports on the US reporting system now. There's over 72,000 reports on the European Vigibase reporting system. And then you have Ireland, obviously, with their own 1,100 reported and 354 of those, as it stood in November, were unresolved. And now they've taken that column out. So parents and public no longer have access to see whether cases have been resolved or unresolved. So that's very strange as well that the HPRA have now hidden that column. But all these kids suffer with things like severe daily headaches, muscle fatigue, limbs paralysis, you know, chronic intracellular and viral bacterial infections that have been given free rein through a weakened immune system, and that can also be blood tested and has been in many cases. You know, they have gastro problems, they have seizures, pancreatitis, early onset of menopause, new onset of autoimmune conditions in a cluster. So it's not just an autoimmune condition, or it's not just seizures, or it's not just pancreatitis, but it's a cluster of these together. 10,000 of kids worldwide are making this up. Is that what they want us to believe? Do they actually think that all these kids are going to be? I mean, that's a conspiracy theory in itself. How are they going to sell that to Irish moms and dads?
No, it's not. It's not a conspiracy. It's the greatest coincidence theory of all time, Anna. What a coincidence
that thousands
of girls all over the world have these horrendous debilitating illnesses, chronic fatigue, seizures. It's just an amazing coincidence that. And you know what, Anna?
Parents like me speaking out on behalf of my daughter and all these other kids, we are narcissists and attention seekers. And, you know, I've been called everything under the sun. I have mental illnesses and I have personality disorders. And, you know, I'm obviously a murderer and all these other, you know, emotional terrorists, which you've been called by your own. Imagine being called that by the head of the very organization that you feel recommended this vaccine that your previously perfectly healthy child has been affected by. Imagine
because of what they have to lose.
And rage and hurt that causes.
Because of what they have to lose, you see. Because everything is on the table. I'm going to make the point again for any of the... for those who persecute people like Anna Cannon, I'm going to make the point again. Neither Anna Cannon nor any of the people associated with her are anti-vaccination. They've never in their lives had anything against vaccinations. So before I say what I'm going to say next, Anna Cannon is not necessarily agreeing with this. I've always believed, you see, where this is concerned, once the lid comes off this, then everything else that might have caused harm to children or to anybody else is on the table. Whatever you think about that, as a listener, is your own business. But that's the thing, you see, it's protectionism. They can't allow people to understand or to come to the conclusion that this is a bad, bad, bad vaccine and that it's doing terrible things, because when it comes out, everything else is up for grabs then. We've got about 2 minutes, Anna, so I'm going to give you those 2 minutes, right? I'm going to shut up and let you say what you want for the next 2 minutes, and then we're going to have to get out.
I want to say that I know many parents who have children who they believe have been vaccine injured in various circumstances, and why shouldn't they be allowed to question what made their previously healthy child ill? Why is it that we can't question vaccinations? Why is that a taboo subject? Why is anyone mentioning, why is anyone that has a vaccine injured child being destroyed publicly rather than supported? Whilst any other child who suffer any other illness have full support, these kids and their poor parents are just being absolutely eliminated, humiliated, you name it. We live in a democracy. There is freedom of speech. In our case, we have 450 now teenage girls who will need help. They need help and treatment, because if they don't, their conditions are getting more chronic and they'll be much harder to resolve another 5 years down the line. Plus the mental effect on these girls is enormous. And can we just please have a more respectful conversation about this? If the HSE would have conducted themselves in a respectful manner and with meaningful informed consent, looking at this group of girls, looking to see how they could help improve their quality of life, they wouldn't have the uptake plummeting right now. So that's nothing to do with the bunch of parents who came together as a parent-led support group regret. It's all to do with the HSE's own conduct. And I'm calling on Tony O'Brien now for a public apology for what he said about parents, calling parents emotional terrorists.
Followed
and
by
I'm also calling on him
to
prove to us what our daughters now are now suffering with, because it's not chronic fatigue syndrome as they've made it out to be.
Annie, you know you've an open door here. It's a tragedy that in your own country, outside of the various independent media organisations in Ireland, but outside of that, that commercial media and national media have basically abandoned the girls and the questions the girls and their families are asking. You have an open door here. Whenever there's any news or anything you want to get out there, you can do it here. Because when, of course, we put the videos up on YouTube, and there's no narcissism here, but believe it or believe it not, these people do pay attention and they do listen to these things. So there's no harm in following up this with you regularly. People should go to regret.ie if you're affected by it. If you want to find out more about why these girls are taking the measures they are taking, why Regret is doing what it's doing to ask these questions, go to regret.ie. Anna, you're great, and so are the women, and more power to you and your children. And I hope you'll get the support you need from somewhere. And I'd love to be hearing sometime soon that you're taking legal action. It'd be a fantastic thing. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you very much, Richie. Thank you very much. I appreciate that open door. I really do, more than you know.
It's an honour. Look after yourself. The lovely, the wonderful Anna Cannon, live on the line from Dublin. Regret.ie. She's the spokesperson, the spokeswoman, I should say, for that very important group. Hundreds of girls in Ireland affected, adversely affected by exposure to the Gardasil HPV vaccine. It's not just Ireland, it's all over the world. It's incredible that having come out and asked questions about the symptoms and the illnesses being experienced by their children, what the members of Regret and their families have received from the Irish government and from the Irish media is a torrent of never-ending abuse. Lies. Lies. Lies told about them and about their associations and about them being conspiracy theorists and emotional terrorists. It doesn't... what can't be ignored is they are asking, why are our children sick? Could it be this vaccine? Can we please have an inquiry? Can we please have an independent review, a medical review of what has happened, what's going on with this vaccine? And for that, they've been abused and abused and abused and mocked and ridiculed. And, you know, when you think some of these girls are very young, and they've been targeted on social media, and these girls are ill as it is. Think of the risk to these girls. You know, risk of self-harm. I didn't want to say that to Anna. Things like that, because of the torrent of abuse they've gotten for being ill. Something they didn't choose. That's it for the programme. Back tomorrow, Wednesday at 7 p.m. British Summer Time. Big thanks to Simon Stewart, my mate Simon, for looking after the YouTube channel. Huge thanks also to Aaron Calland. Aaron, look after yourself. Top man, looks after the Richie Allen website. And as always, thanks to the wonderful Jean-Anne Crowley for the assistance from time to time on the programme with facts and figures and bits of information as well. Thank you for listening. Leaving you with some Blue Oyster Cult. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Wednesday, at 7 p.m. the usual time. Stay in touch with davidicke.com/headlines and do listen to fabradiointernational.com. I've been Richie Allen. Thank you to Anna Cannon, and a big thanks to Bjorn as well earlier on in the programme. We'll be right back.